You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental spoken word radio produced by David Clark. This episode is entitled Mouthfeel.
I literally always say the same thing. I say, my name is Valentine, I'll be your dental hygienist today. And then sit them down in my chair.
While the eyes are seen as the window to the soul, the human mouth doesn't get spoken of so glowingly. Truth be told, it is hard to imagine gazing soulfully or otherwise into another person's mouth. We generally leave that to the professionals. But if we're open to looking at the mouth in new ways, it may tell us a lot. The origin of the word mouth seems to be rooted in the concept of an opening or an entrance, such as a door or a gate. This is a rich idea to my thinking, that the mouth serves as both entrance and egress for food and drink, poetry and song. The tongue and teeth are the threshold across which all earthy aspects of human experience must pass, our sobs and laughter, our barf and our phlegm. I like to think about how seeing the mouth differently can maybe make us think a little differently about the world, too.
I'm not a believer in flossing.
You aren't?
No, I think it's immoral.
I've had this conversation, not about flossing, but with fluoride. This woman told me that it was very immoral and that I was, and people in the dental field are evil. And she just sat in my chair and she was talking to me very normally for the first hour and a half. And then I brought up fluoride and then she like flipped a switch and she was like, what you're doing to children is terrible. Why are you doing this? And actually it was a very nice moment. It ended up being kind of neat because I sat her up. We sat face to face and I explained to her everything I had learned about fluoride. And by the end of it, she said that she wanted some. So I was able to convince someone who told me I was a bad person for asking about fluoride into getting it.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like people just want to talk. And talk about their own opinions.
Do you like brushing your teeth?
Do I like brushing my own teeth? I think it's fine. I don't know if I love brushing my teeth. But after going through dental hygiene school, I can't stand the feeling of my teeth being dirty. I always worry that I'm going to get a cavity. And you know those teeth dreams where all your teeth fall out? They're 100% worse for me because I know how hard and expensive it is to get your teeth replaced. How like incredibly complicated and like how like difficult the surgeries can be. I loved going to the dentist when I was younger. I loved my dental hygienist. And I always kind of wanted to do something in healthcare. It kind of just happened. I didn't want to be a nurse because they have to deal with a lot of other bodily fluids. But teeth and like saliva have never really bothered me. And when we first started using the instruments, we basically had to like learn how to use our hands again. I remember my first day at dental hygiene school where they like first let us touch our instruments. We had to learn how to like hold it in a really specific way. It's called a modified pen grasp. And I remember being like, oh my god, this is too much. I can't hold my instruments. And then just 3 months of us learning how to move our wrists, move our arms in specific ways, and adapt our instruments all on dummies. They are pretty freaky. So they have interchangeable mouths, so you each get your own mouth.
Whoa.
Just the mouth and teeth. And then the dummy is a white, jawless mannequin. It has shoulders. And you put your teeth, like, you lock it in, and then you can lay your dummy down, and then everybody gets one. There's, like, lips, but the dummy is always having, like, it's curling, it's always curling its lips, so you can see all the teeth.
Maybe the trained dental professional really has to hone in on the human mouth as this kind of detached object without a history or hopes or fears or people that love the person attached to the mouth. Perhaps what's needed in order to boldly plummet into a stranger's mouth and poke around with metal instruments is this reductionist view of the human mouth as a domain unto itself. Did you ever as a kid do that thing with a flashlight at night, you know, where you were camping out in a tent and someone shone a flashlight under their chin and it lit up their face in a way that it wasn't normally lit and it totally freaked everybody out? My friends and I had a variant on that idea when we were little, of looking at something from a radically different perspective, in this case, the human face. Somebody would lie on the floor and the others would stand over that person so that they were looking at the person's face upside down. When you look at a human face upside down, at least when I was a kid and still had an unimpeded imagination, the mouth especially became a fascinating feature. It looked like some kind of terrifying cyclopean eye in the middle of where your forehead should be. And the eyes became these weird, blinky orbs at the bottom of the face where you expected to see a chin. If you've never tried this, or if you need a refresher, I encourage you to take a minute. Find a compliant family member or friend or kid whose imagination hasn't yet atrophied, or even go stand over your cat or dog. Have a look at their face upside down and see what you think. If you can get them to speak or bark or yawn, it's even better. It's fascinating, I promise you. It's well worth it. I'll wait. But I think about the implications of this idea, to imagine that the human person can be segmented in this way, the parts cut away from the whole, and be considered in isolation. What I like about the upside-down face approach is that it lets you look at the human mouth in a whole new way, without having to excise the mouth from the face or detach it from the human head and the human being. I think throwing off an ordinary perspective can be a good thing if unsettling. It can shake up our thinking and make us look at things differently. Looking at a human face with a mouth where you think the forehead should be, for example, raises all kinds of questions. It makes me think about the kind of resistance I find in myself when I encounter some things wholly different or unexpected. I was reminded of this playing around and getting different perspectives on the mouth idea recently when a colleague in Nothing to See Here posted a picture of a dummy mouth used to train dental hygienists. The dummy mouth is kind of a death's head gaping maw that generated for me a shock of a different kind. Check it out. It's also well worth it. I'll wait right here. So what did you think of that? I was struck by a few things after I overcame the urge to run screaming from the room. First of all, would you kiss your mother with that mouth? Secondly, what are we being told about how medical science envisions the average patient behind the terrifying, disarticulated head grimacing back at us? Within the yawning pink expanse of rubber flesh, one discerns a distinctly Caucasian and arguably male norm as the typical patient, however badly rendered with this grotesque mask. Finally, I'm not quite sure how this frankly terrible, shrieky-looking face instills empathy or a sense of care in the aspiring hygienist. Then I got to thinking that maybe knowing the person behind the mouth wasn't the point. It occurred to me that this disarticulated human head really wonderfully encapsulates the medical model, which, despite advances, persists in separating the human being from the patient.
It's hard to tell someone that their mouth sucks. It's hard to say, like, it's hard to like sit down with someone and be like, you need to work harder, or because no one wants to hear that. And obviously people get like frustrated if they're always going to the dentist and it's always something bad. It's like hard not to sugarcoat things because you always want to sugarcoat things. You always want to be like, oh, it's not that bad. But in reality, you're doing disservice to someone. You need to be able to like, you need to work harder on your teeth and you need to work harder on your oral health or you'll lose your teeth. And I'm not talking about like scaring patients, but just like not sugarcoating everything can be difficult. I can tell when a patient's starting to get annoyed with me when I start like bringing up the floss talk and like bringing up like you need to brush more. It's like hard to work around that to convince someone that like your teeth are worth putting the time in. And like teeth are often like, they're not like completely necessary for your life. Like they do make life easier. But if you like lose all your teeth, you're not going to die. So it's hard to like convince someone, especially if like there's other issues going on in their life, that teeth are important.
Looking at a dental model with its disembodied mouth makes me think about the ways that I too may see another person in this fragmented, dehumanizing way. Looking at an upside down human face lets me see how the mouth can, in fact, be a kind of entrance or door into a new understanding.
Yeah, I used to be so embarrassed about my teeth because they're just so big. I've got really big teeth, like, you can't miss them. They're just like, when you talk to someone, it's like, boom, teeth. And whenever at one point I was going to the dentist a lot because I had braces. And so I had to go to the orthodontist every month to get them tightened. And at one point I asked the doctor, I was like, can you please shave my teeth? I want them to be smaller. And he's like, no, Carmen, we don't do that. And I was just like, but they're so big, Dr. Porter, they're so big. And he's like, Carmen, you just have to embrace it. And embrace the big teeth.
When you like straighten your teeth, it's not because you can't eat and it's not because it's going to hurt you. It's literally just for aesthetics. And in like other countries, you see a lot of people with like very crooked teeth just because it's not very like it's not a big deal to them, it's not a very big deal to their culture. Where like here, I guess very westernized culture, like straight teeth look cleaner for some reason, even though they may not be. I think somehow they kind of symbolize like if you have straight teeth, and if you have like white teeth, then you're clean, approachable, and like maybe wealthy because it's expensive to straighten teeth and like whiten your teeth. Like think of like stereotypes of people with broken teeth, they're often like poor or like unable to fix them. So maybe it's like a class thing. It's just the way we view it.
That's the one of the first things that I noticed. Like, do you know who Andrea Zittel is? An artist. Yeah. The first thing I saw like her Art 21, like 10 years ago maybe, and I was like, I love her teeth. And I think in a way I was trying to accept my own teeth by being like, Andrea Zittel's teeth are fabulous. She is so fabulous. I want to be her. And then I was like, maybe I just need to own the big teeth. because she's so cool that maybe I can be cool like her. I don't know. Maybe that's ridiculous.
I have a pretty big teeth too. And my family, they all have like tiny, like teeth. And like when I, every time I smiled, I felt like, I don't know what's his name, but like there was this rock band and their singer had a huge mouth and then big teeth.
Rolling Stones?
I was gonna say Bon Jovi, but I don't know, to be honest.
I guess like, I feel like teeth have a lot to do with aesthetics. People are always concerned with the way their teeth look. I honestly look at people's teeth all the time. And like when you smile, you don't want to be like self-conscious if you're smiling. I definitely look at people's mouths more. We joke that we used to look at people's eyes first, but now we see the mouths and then eyes. And we joke, we always like see strangers, and I do wonder how it would be like to clean their teeth. Like if I can see someone's crooked tooth, I wonder if I would have like a lot of trouble cleaning around it.
The dream that I had back in Turkey, I think it was this year, that I was like smoking a lot of pot in my dream. And then I was like actually getting high. The funny thing that is, it's so hard for me to find some pot in Turkey. But the dream was so realistic. I was like so enjoying it. And then I woke up also there.
Oh, you were sober when you woke up?
Yeah.
Did you try to go back to sleep and get high again?
Yeah, I tried. Never worked. Hmm. But I lost my teeth in the dream. I was touching it and all went in and then fell down. And then I woke up like...
It's like the teeth are falling out, but they're like... It's like... And then it's like this like accumulation of teeth and I'm like choking on my teeth. And then I usually wake up like when I'm like choking and it's like, and then, yeah. And then like Sue said, you like check if you have your teeth right away and you're like, okay, good. And then you can breathe again.
I wonder why that happens.
Yeah, I read about it. It's about like being worried about like personal appearance.
Back when I was like, really, really, really into lucid dreaming. It was one of my waking up signs. Like if something was going wrong and I want to get out of my dream, it was just like I would just touch my teeth with my tongue and they would just all fall off.
Like, oh my gosh!
Like instantly, and I would feel it, and it was such a bad feeling. I would hate it every single time. It was either that or looking at a mirror, basically, to actually wake me up. They wake me up from like my lucid dream to like back into reality. But a couple times I was like, I swear to, like, I came back and I was like falling down on my bed, like inside it, and I was like, oh my god, please let me have my teeth, please let me have my teeth. And you know, and I did have my teeth. It's insane.
Whoa.
My mom still keeps my baby teeth. I found it super weird.
Yeah, I think my mom might have my baby teeth too. Yeah, it is weird. I think it's like in a little container in her bedside table. Now that very strange.
Same.
Do any of your mothers practice witchcraft or voodoo?
Definitely not my mom, no.
Kiss and tell.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about kissing lately, and I started thinking about the last time I kissed someone, and the last time I had a first kiss, and like the variety of kisses, and then I just couldn't stop thinking. It just kind of spiraled, kissing my aunts and uncles and my cousins in Montreal growing up, and doing like the cheek kiss, the double kiss on the cheeks, and just remembering really not liking that. Kissing my grandfather. He always had like this stubble, and he always smelt like Players cigarettes and Molson Canadian beer, and my grandmother's skin was just like, it smelled like bad perfume, and it was soft and weird. It didn't feel like skin. And like when my dad would like leave for work in the morning, my mom would kiss him, but it was like a very like, it was like almost like a duty. It was like a duty kiss. Like it wasn't like, there was no romance or emotion behind it. It was just like part of the routine. So there was like that kind of kiss.
It's interesting because in my culture, kissing is so normal. I grew up in Turkey. We don't like constantly kiss each other, but like kissing is pretty normal. But there's one thing that we do in our family that I'm not comfortable with doing. It's like kissing hands. People first hold their hands, kiss it, and then put it on their forehead. I just found it super weird. I don't know why hands. Oh, also there's another way to kiss in Turkey. People touch their like top of their head from both sides.
Oh, like, so it's like the double kiss, but just with like head touching?
Yeah.
One time I kissed my grandfather on the lips and it completely freaked me out. I was like, it was so weird. I was like, and like, he wasn't phased, and I was like, it's like, oh.
This is a story that's recounted through my family, like, always, because this is when I was 4 or 5, and I was so big into my personal space. Like, I would never let anyone else touch me or, like, kiss me or whatever. And even, like I would let my mom do it. Like parents, but like other, like anyone outside the family, like even my mom, I would be like, no, you know, you can't do it. Going on holiday this one time, on summer holiday, we stopped at a restaurant. My mom, apparently one of the waiters tried kissing me, and I just hugging me or something. And I got really mad at this, and so I took the garden hose, and I brought it into the kitchen and sprayed everyone down. I was like everyone. So like the whole kitchen staff and everything there was just wet. All the food.
What?
And my
that
mom
seems so extreme.
My mom was like wondering like what happened to her, what, like, you know, why is everything so late? And they started looking for me. And the waiters started showing up like all wet, like drenched in water. And they're like, ma'am, you need to take your kid. And they were like, you know, we didn't do anything. You know, he just came in, he just ran in with a hose and, you know, tried, you know, sprayed water all over us.
Yeah, we've kind of, this is not the age of kissing.
No.
No.
2020.
Mm. Is not, at least not a huggy year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of sad, I think. I think, but lately I've been really wanting people to touch me. I just miss hugging people. And I don't usually like hugging people. But I really miss it. So it's this weird thing of I miss this thing that I thought that I didn't like. And I'm wondering, when will I see my family in Montreal again? Traveling is kind of weird right now. I'm in Alberta. When will I do the double kiss again? And it makes me sad. I want to, yeah. just thinking about kissing, and...
You ever made a patient cry?
No. I've seen people cry in dental chairs. I've cried in a dental chair. I've almost seen someone cry, but that wasn't because of me. It was because she was losing her teeth, and I was actually very sad. But no, I haven't made anybody cry. Not that I know. Maybe they went home and cried.
Yeah, probably. A lot.
A lot. How many times? I'm sure I've made people sore. I've definitely made people sore.
I hate it.
How, like, sore you feel after your...
Yeah.
You gotta get down. It. You gotta get down in there.
It's not worth it, man.
You're gonna lose your teeth, man. You know how hard those are fixed? Those are to fix? They're super hard.
Yeah. I got a connection, though. Because my uncle is, like, a prosthodontist.
Mm. Prosthodontics, yeah.
He can get me in.
Yeah, I can get you some.
I feel like... I can't tell if other people feel the same way, but I imagine that they might feel the same way about peanut butter sticking to the top of their mouth. I don't know. I wonder if, like, what I taste, how much different it tastes for you.
Yeah, I feel like some people are probably more sensitive to textures and others to, like, specific flavors and... Yeah, I feel like there's also a lot of, depends on like what you ate growing up and what the context to that was.
Do you notice that like people who speak different languages, their mouth move differently? So my dad is from Montreal, and the like all of my like my aunts, they like do this like kind of like kissy face, kind of like what is the difference of kissing someone from different that speak different languages, because like the muscles of their mouth probably move slightly differently.
Yeah, like French kiss, they use a tongue.
Oh yeah, of course, the French kiss.
I find myself relying on it a bit more when I am interacting with people in French here. Like I find that if I read lips and focus on what they're saying, then I can understand it a lot better. And I only noticed that since moving to Montreal and like speaking to people in French regularly again. And I struggle with it a bit, but when I read lips, it helps me.
I honestly look at people's teeth all the time. And like when you smile, you don't want to be like self-conscious if you're smiling. It's kind of cool because like even the way you rest your tongue kind of impacts your teeth. Like, think about when you're, like, resting and not thinking. Your tongue actually sits on the roof of your mouth. And actually, I think it might be because of we speak English. I remember reading this one thing, that you rest your tongue somewhere else if you speak other languages.
Hmm. Are you ever jealous of people's teeth?
Yes. Yeah. So not, I had this, like, beautiful couple come in, and they talked about their beautiful wife and beautiful child. And they were like one of the most beautiful people I've seen ever. And they had perfect teeth. Like absolutely perfect. But I also think my teeth are very nice.
What made them perfect?
Like white, completely straight, very little bleeding, very little calculus, very clean. But I also think my teeth are very nice too.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental spoken word radio produced by David Clark. This episode was entitled Mouthfeel. It featured writing by Kelly O'Neill and an interview with the dental hygienist Valentine. Also appearing in the show were Devin Chambers, Carmen Bellinger, Sue Eplixi, Bartu Kuttner, Gemma Leslie, and David Clark. Music in the episode was by Ross Unger and Snarklore. The show was edited with sound design by David Clark. Nothing to See Here is produced by David Clark in Halifax, Nova Scotia. For more episodes, please search for Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com.